Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Last night in Cleveland, 27-27, and the Browns have a chance to win it.
And it's Travis Coons for the win. And it's blocked. And it's picked up by Will Hill. Will Hill runs down the sideline. Hill's going to get a block. Will Hill is going to win the game on a blocked field goal. Unbelievable.
Will Hill, thrill me. What a play at the buzzer. It's a kick six. And the Ravens find a way to win.
And we welcome you to another season of Cleveland Browns football. Yes, indeed. That's Mike Tirico and John Gruden with the call last night on ESPN's Monday Night Football, our play-by-play call of the day. Unbelievable. The Browns do everything to win the game, except win the game. Welcome to another season of Cleveland Browns football. Unbelievable. So let's turn our attention now from another season of Cleveland Browns football, where success rarely, if ever, happens, at least not since the Brian Sipe era, to something that is successful on a year-in and year-out basis. 17 Big Ten championships, 5 College Cup appearances, last in 2012, and going back to the College Cup, Erica Walsh, head coach of the Penn State women's soccer team. Erica, welcome. First of all, congratulations on getting to the College Cup.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. 21 in a row now where it's one goal or fewer after the 2-0 win Saturday over West Virginia. From Brett Eckerstrom out. I mean, we've talked about this before, but how well is everyone playing championship-level defense?
I mean, this defense, it's as we've talked about, it's young. It's lacks experience on paper, but you wouldn't be able to tell that from watching these guys play. Britt Eckerstrom has been fantastic. She has been, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in the country. She's proved it week in and week out. She's leading this back line of all freshmen and sophomores, and she is a huge key to our success right now.
You mentioned how young they are. How impressive have you been by the fact that collectively they've bought into playing this way?
Well, it's interesting. They're young, but, you know, you think back to teams of young teams, Fab Five and those types of things, and you look at it and go, they've just all grown and developed together. They all feel comfortable with each other. They can talk to each other. They can guide each other. And so unlike some recipes for success in the past where you've got one senior leader, these guys just all guide each other and help each other along and work through mistakes together, and I think that's been a huge key to it.
Do we talk enough about Franny Kraus?
No, you can never talk enough about Franny Kraus on both sides of the ball. It used to be just all about her attack, and now she's doing things on defense that she's never done in the past.
And Ellie Jean set her up on that. Tell us a little bit about the freshman from Coventry, Connecticut.
Yeah, you look at that second goal we scored against West Virginia, and it came off a sequence of about 18 straight passes. So the patience on that attack was tremendous. And then Marissa Shiva gave a little nick over to Ellie Jean, who drove end line. Ellie had just come in the match. One of her first touches got to the end line, something we had been training, you know, all week, something she's taken a lot of pride in because she typically plays off the right. She drove a left-footed ball to the top of the box. Franny Kraus sees the goalkeeper come across the face of the goal and buries it back post.
Yeah, and then there's Emily Ogle. A little bit about her, because we haven't really talked a lot about her.
Well, it's interesting because it might take 20 games to really recognize the brilliance of Emily Ogle. She just sits in there and quietly does her job and does it as well as anybody plays that pivot position in the country. Both sides of the ball, she is our link to our attack. She is the one that protects that back line. And again, you know, I don't think you'd see the success we've had without her.
This year, at Jeffrey Field, you drew 21,856 fans. That's a record. What did they mean to your players?
You know, you talk to these players about Penn State soccer, why they came here, why this has been the best experience they could possibly imagine, and they talk about the atmosphere at Jeffrey Field. They talk about that before they talk about so many other things that you would think with high-level student-athletes. They talk about walking into that stadium week in and week out and getting chills and feeling like they're playing for a university and a community that really understands and embraces what they're trying to do and supports, you know, supports them every step of the way.
I want to talk a little bit more about Britt Eckerstrom. You mentioned that she, in your opinion, is the best goalie in the country. What makes her the best goalie as an athlete, but also as a communicator back there?
You know, one of the things that makes Britt so special is she didn't come from a background of some of these other top-level players of being a part of all the national teams and all that experience. She is just a player that has been tireless in her work ethic. She's always been a great athlete, but has been a bit raw. The work of our goalkeeper coach, Tim Wassel, the time and effort they've put in, not only on the field, but she's got a thin build. She's had to put on so much strength and power, just so she doesn't get knocked around in the goal box. And that evolution in her 4 years has been fantastic. But her communication is what has grown the most. She's a bit of a quiet kid off the field. And so to hear her now on the field, you would never know it. Pro scouts are noticing these types of things. It's what they're looking for in both high-level goalkeepers that can lead a back line, and she certainly has proven that she can do so.
Erica, when you and I talked Thursday night at the coaches show, I asked about, you know, you've been down this road before, you know, but a lot of them have not been down a road like this before. And I said, how are they? And you said, you know what, you know, they're a little tight on my, it was Wednesday night you were talking about, you know, the extra kicks are tight. Okay, now we take the next step, all right? Okay, you've been down this road. A lot of them haven't. What have you sensed from them? Is there a weight that you're off that you're in the College Cup, or have you seen still that little tightness, that edge?
Well, we met with the captains yesterday, and when I walked out of that meeting, the biggest impression that they made on me is that they want to win this College Cup. You know, they're not sitting around just patting themselves on the back and just overly excited that they're going to the College Cup.
Right.
They're talking about Rutgers. They're talking about how they can, how they can prepare the team mentally to play a team for the third time, how they can get these young players to understand that, the stakes will be higher, the pressure, obviously the pressure starts to build, but we still just need to continue to do things that we're doing. And their mindset, I thought, was spot on.
All right. Now the crowds are larger in this. Ticket requests, of course, come in for this. Media is greater as well. How have you talked to them? What have you told them about how to deal with that to make it as normal as if it's a Friday night at Jeffrey Field as possible?
Well, we continue just to talk about our process and the way that we go through the course of the week. We've been extremely methodical over these last 4 or 5 weeks about the way that we approach each training week, each travel week, what we do, what we say, what we wear, and just to make sure that it's all part of the same routine. And yeah, there'll be a little bit more here and there that they'll have to deal with, but these are the things that we believe in. This is what we're all about, and to make sure that we kind of stick to the script.
All right.
From that standpoint.
Right. Let's get to Rutgers now. When you have sat down and you've looked at the video of them, what jumps out right away?
I mean, their performance against UVA was one for the ages. Their commitment, their discipline defensively. I mean, this is a team that prides themselves in shutouts. They've got an outstanding goalkeeper. They like to keep possession. You know, they're not too dissimilar from our Penn State team. But, you know, and then the other thing is their depth. They have tremendous depth. They're just running players in and off the field all day long. So, you know, I think that this is a team with a serious amount of belief.
I think they've only given up 2 goals in a match once all season, if I recall correctly. And that's been it. That was to you.
Right.
I mean, what, you know, is it midfield play? Is it what's the key that unlocks the door against them?
It is absolutely in the middle of the midfield.
Yeah.
It's whoever dominates that middle of the midfield. Their two center backs, Bree Reed and Erica Skorsky, are two of the best in the country, and they want to keep the ball in front of them. You're going to have to get through the midfield and engage them. Otherwise, they just keep dropping off, and it's tough to get in behind where we're at our best. So, you know, I think we found the formula last match of how to unlock them, but we can't be naive to think that that's going to be the same formula going into this match.
Yeah, one final question. Because the most recent meeting was, quote, recent, what are the pluses and are there any minuses to that?
Well, I think that, you know, I think the plus is our team goes into training today with a really good picture of what it will take to unlock this group. We watched the Virginia game, or again, I think that was the best match that Rutgers played all season long, and we didn't see things that were too different than what they've been doing against us. So even against teams outside of the Big Ten, teams, you know, UVA was number one team in the country going into that match, they're staying to their blueprint, which leads us to believe that we'll see a similar blueprint going into Friday.
Well, I can tell you right now, Friday at 5 o'clock, ESPNU is locked in on every television set in this area because we're going to be watching you. Best of luck in all of this. You've had a great season to this point. Good luck.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Erica Walsh, Penn State women's soccer coach. They play in the College Cup National Semifinal against Rutgers Friday at 5 from Cary, North Carolina. It will be on ESPNU. We'll come back with more in a moment. Final half hour includes Frank Finani of the York Daily Record on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. And Miami has reportedly talked to Dan Mullen of Mississippi State, who constantly seems to be out there looking for other jobs, and also to Butch Davis, and they may talk to Mark Richt. But there are also some reports that Mark Richt may want to be an offensive coordinator for a bit and then go back into coaching again. So, you know, he's very much out there as well. And then the NFL has reassigned the referees from the Arizona-San Francisco game because of the mistakes that they made. Human error is part of this when it comes to games. I understand that. I've always understood that. The discipline, they've been very public about it. Pete Morelli is a very good referee. But no one was holding back after the Arizona-San Francisco game. Bruce Arians called the referees' explanations, quote, FUBAR, saying they can't count to three. And Alex Boone said those refs stunk. According to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, Morelli and his crew were reassigned after making mistakes in the Arizona-San Francisco game. Morelli's crew was yanked off the Monday night Cowboys-Redskins game. They say someone in the NFL says they weren't assigned to that game to begin with, so we're not. That's kind of fuzzy. So it was really crazy how that game played out and the mistakes that they made. And I don't know, we should not be seeing more mistakes. in officiating. The replay should cover up the vast majority of them. I mean, replay should cover up the vast majority of mistakes. And you would hope that along the line it happens. Now, they can't cover up penalties, and they can't cover up fouls in basketball. Can't cover up either one of those. Happens, it happens. It's called, it's called. Doesn't mean it's right, but that's what you can't cover up. You can't mask that. Replay, though, can mask everything out, everything else. Did the ball go out of bounds off of you? Is it a catch? Is it a touchdown? Is it a turnover? Did a shot make it before the shot clock went off? Items such as that, replay can cover up a multitude of mistakes, unless, of course, it's the opening of the Penn State-Ohio State game, where, well, it didn't quite work. To this day, that I find that explanation to be bizarre. Josh McCown out for the season. Mike Pettine won't say who's starting. They did sign Terrell Pryor, by the way, as a backup wide receiver. And Devin Still's daughter is cancer-free. Great, great, awesome news for little Leah. And Ben Roethlisberger is staying in the concussion protocol. So those are some of the headlines. The NCAA Council did approve having 5-win teams be in the bowl picture this year. Now, believe it or not, there are other cities that have requested bowls. Austin, Texas, and Little Rock, Arkansas, both have paperwork in requesting bowl games. Yes. I think they right now it's 40, and I think there's a third one that wants to get out there, too. It's amazing. We get it to 86 teams needed. 86. Unbelievable. Kirby Smart appears to be the leading candidate, by the way, to take the Georgia job. As we mentioned earlier, Missouri has passed on going to a bowl game. Scott Frost, former Nebraska quarterback, Oregon offensive coordinator, is going to be hired by Central Florida, taking that job. So those are some of the items that are out there on this particular day. Items that certainly are worthy of discussion. 800-795-9565. Frank Bodani next half hour for from the York Daily Record, talking about Penn State football. Saturday, Temple and Houston American Championship game. Also coming up Saturday, Florida, Alabama. That's at 4. SEC Championship game on CBS. Stanford, USC's on ESPN. At 7:45 Saturday, Michigan State, Iowa's on Fox at 8. And ABC has Clemson and North Carolina. Those are the games coming up on Saturdays. The MAC championship is going to be on Friday night. And Texas plays Baylor on Saturday, and Kansas State plays West Virginia as well. And then for Kansas State, they're trying to get into the bowl race. But three more cities, at minimum, I believe, applied for bowl games. It's stunning. It's stunning. They have three more future proposed bowl games. And now they're going to have put together a committee to see about the feasibility of all this, because now 5-win teams are in. Future proposed bowl games are, these are the future games that have been proposed. The Austin Bowl at Austin, Texas at Royal Stadium to start next year. Medal of Honor Bowl in Charleston, South Carolina. Now that's a minor one. The Melbourne Bowl in Melbourne, Australia. Christmas Bowl in Los Angeles. Dubai is asked about a bowl. Ireland's asked about a bowl. Little Rock, Arkansas is asked about a bowl. And Toronto's asked about getting back in the bowl game again. Now, the Cure Bowl and Christmas Bowl were turned down by the NCAA in 2010. The Cure Bowl made it. The Christmas Bowl never did. This is unbelievable. I mean, that's one. Now, some of these are obviously for FCS. The Medal of Honor Bowl is an FCS game. And Melbourne Bowl. Melbourne Bowl, I think, is real. Christmas Bowl in Los Angeles at the Coliseum. The Dubai Bowl. Hey, everybody, we're going to Dubai. What do you do there? Well, they have casinos, the whole thing. But don't venture out of the city. It's all desert. Wow. Orlando has three of these things. Holy cow. All those cities want it. Little Rock really wants one, so does Austin. Let's go to Dubai. Frank Bodani will show up next. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, bottom of the hour, news is next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's Tuesday. Tomorrow's show will be from Boston, where Penn State plays in the Big Ten ACC Challenge against Boston College. We will do the show from Boston. Time now for our bozo of the day. I'm sorry, but you have to go back to the collective Cleveland Browns. You have to. When Mike Pettine was thinking about going for two last night, and he initially put up the pinky and the index finger going for two, I thought, good for you. Win it now. Don't wait. You've won two games all year. You got a minute 45 to go. Just do it. If you don't make it, kick an onside kick. Use your time. Whatever. And then he changed his mind and he kicked the extra point. I thought, okay, fine. Well, it worked out great. The Browns intercepted Matt Schaub, and suddenly my idea of, hey, you're going for two, goes by the boards. They're actually in great shape and can win it. And then Austin Davis does something which is so typical of young, inexperienced players who don't know time, score, situation, rules. They don't know any of it. He's getting to the sideline. He hook slides. Well, as the quarterback, they can't touch him. Okay. 3.5, 4 more feet, baby. If you run out of bounds, they still can't touch you. And not only that, the clock stops. What are you doing? So then they line up to kick a field goal. And he hasn't missed a field goal all year, but his long for the season's 44 yards. So your first thought is, okay, how low is this coming out? Oh, it came out low, all right. And the Browns go from here's a kick to win the game and be no worse than overtime to losing the game. You are the bozos of the day. Welcome to another season of Cleveland Browns football. We bring in Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Frank, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Steve. How you doing?
Doing great. All right. Yeah, I think the standard question is everybody, what your reaction was to the news, and then move forward.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised that anything like that would have happened the day after the regular season was over. I don't really think, from talking to my colleagues and lots of other people, I'm not sure anybody else expected that now. Maybe after the bowl game, but so yeah, a big surprise. Maybe in the timing more than anything. But exciting now here that Penn State fans get to, in a lot of ways, get what they wanted. We'll see if they like what they're getting.
Right. That's exactly right. We'll find out along the road. You and I both know this is I call it rebuilding, and I was talking to Rich Scarcella. He used the word recovery, and I like that word better. I don't know what word you like, but in this recovery period, there are a lot of holes still in this roster to fill. So when you look at it realistically, where are they right now in this recovery?
I think this year was the first year they could truly rebuild and recover. I mean, I think really last year they're almost just treading water to try to stay afloat.
Right.
So I think people don't want to hear that. And it's harder, too, because at the exact same time this is going on at Penn State, you have the Big Ten East becoming better than it's ever been, maybe.
Right.
So it's not a real good timing situation, maybe, as well for Penn State fans, too, because it's harder to recover quicker when you're playing Michigan and Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer and Mark D'Antonio.
Right.
I think they're making progress by bringing in the talent that's going to be needed to complete the recovery. But in a lot of places, that is going to take some more time, even when those guys get here.
And in fact, I've used the example a couple of times. Mike Motti got hurt against Temple a few years ago. Not the Indiana one, his last one, but the middle ACL he had against Temple. He was replaced in the lineup by Nate Stupar, who ended up being drafted by the Raiders. They don't have that situation if somebody gets hurt on this team.
No. And I think linebacker is probably that in the offensive line for me are the two thinnest areas. And it's not like those guys, those players aren't working hard. I mean, it's not their fault. It's simply you can't get around the idea that they don't have maybe the talent that's ready. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And linebacker is so important. And people at Penn, watching Penn State are so used to seeing guys like Nate Stupar and Mowdy and Paul Posluszny that I don't know if you're coaching how you get around that all the time.
Yeah, I don't
know. Not against Michigan State, for example.
Right.
You can't. I don't know how you get around it.
Right. You mentioned Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State and the fine coaches that they have. But they also have fully stocked rosters, which is a huge plus, and older rosters.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think people, when Bill O'Brien was here, he actually, there was a lot of turmoil, but he had more of an older stocked roster.
He did.
Especially his first year, which made at least on the field easier.
Right. No, I think that's fair. The bowl situation, a lot of times, like, you want to get fans to go to these things. Sometimes you wonder in the decision-making process, so like, okay, hey, let the fans know what's going on. Do you have any guess right now? And I do emphasize the word guess as to how this could play out.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us have talked, and I mean, I think it's either Jacksonville or Nashville. I don't think anything else is really, when it comes down to the end, I don't think anything else is in play. And if you told me right now which game they're going to, I would say Jacksonville, Pax Slayer Bowl.
Okay.
Just because of, you know, part of what you said, I mean, you want to, with a 7-5 team in this state, you want to keep them, I think, on the East Coast if you can. You're going to lobby for that. And I think the Big Ten understands that. You want to get the biggest bang for your buck. And there are lots of Penn State fans in Florida that wouldn't have to go very far to see a 7-5 team.
Yeah, I completely agree with that logic, completely. The only part that throws a wrench in it for me is that the Gator, I'm not picking the tax layer thing, I don't know. The Gator and the Music City have these 3-year, these 6-year agreements where they take 3 teams over 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Gator took Iowa last year, so they're down now to 2-5, and the Music City didn't take a Big Ten team last year, and they've got to take 3 over the next 5. How does that play into this, if at all? It doesn't mean they can't take back-to-back Big Ten teams, because they can.
Well, I think it depends who is out there. Penn State is in their wheelhouse this year. They weren't in their wheelhouse last year. They maybe won't be for who knows how many years the way it goes. This is Jacksonville's chance to get Penn State. They may not get another one. And I think, you know, it all goes, the Big Ten is the team is what, who decides it. But I think, you know, they're working together here. They see that this is Jacksonville's chance to get Penn State. And does the Big Ten want James Franklin going to Nashville? Okay. With the rape trial still going on. Two of his players are going to be on trial in April. The 7-5 team, they're going to get questioned about. It's not the end of the world, but I mean, you're still putting your team right into the middle of, they're not going to talk. A lot of people are not going to want to talk about the game.
Right.
To James Franklin.
Right.
And he's going to have to fend it off every single press conference, which he can do. But if you have a choice, if you're the Big Ten, do you want Penn State going to that? I mean, there's really not a downside to Jacksonville. There is kind of a little bit to Nashville.
Right. I think you make really, really good points. Really good points. Carl Nassib, Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. How much fun has it been for you watching him develop? Because he was telling me a story, Frank, the other day about he finally gets into his first game, and it's Syracuse at the Meadowlands.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He said, I get in the game. Said, Steve, I'm all set. And they drop back to pass, and I go at him, and I whiffed. And I thought, and he said, I thought, well, they're going to take me out now. I said to him, well, you're not whiffing now. How much fun's it been to see his development?
Oh, I've probably in 20 years, I don't think I've ever seen a story quite like it.
Yeah.
Though I wish we would get a chance to talk to Carl more. He's really engaging and he's a lot of fun. I don't think he's real comfortable with the whole media thing. So we don't maybe get that back and forth as much. I think it would be great. But watching him on the field, you know, people talk all the time about how this guy has a nonstop motor. It's like a cliche anymore, but he truly does. I'm not sure, at least at his position, have I seen someone who is that relentless, and you know that it's going to pay off at some point. And that's why, you know, he didn't have many games when he had 2, 3, 4 huge plays, maybe sacks, but he always had one. And I think it goes to his credit that you could block him for, you know, 30 plays in a row, but the 31st, he's going to get you.
I think he came here, it's like 6'5", 6'6", 213 pounds. He's now 6'7", 275. And I'll tell you another good story. You can file this away when you do your Carl Nassib story. But preseason, there was a scrimmage, and he couldn't go in the scrimmage. And Jack Ham was at the scrimmage, and the two of us are watching. So Carl then starts talking to Carl Nassib. And Jack says, hey, you're my wife Joanne's favorite player. And he says, oh, why is that? He says, because, you know, you're pre-med. And she wants to know what's tougher, organic or inorganic chemistry. So he starts talking about how inorganic chemistry is so difficult. It's unbelievable. He's rolling his eyes and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I looked over and I said, I don't think this conversation is happening at the Baylor scrimmage.
So. Well, it says a lot. You know, I mean, that's been one of the fun things to cover is that you get guys like Carl and John Urschel.
Yeah.
You know, plenty of others, too, that do, they have such great interests aside from the football field. You know that they're going to make something of themselves. And a lot of times that's really intriguing to let others know about.
Yeah, I mean, he's pre-med, and he's, you know, and he really is, as you know, highly intelligent. Saquon Barkley does not get Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Jabril Peppers did. But what, when you watch Barkley, what do you see, Frank?
Well, you know, I didn't play football, and I certainly never coached. But just from just watching how many tailbacks over the last two decades, he just has the combination, I guess, of the vision, the speed, the power, and it's all there. You see it all in one play. Whereas you just don't see that from other running backs. I'm trying to think of another running back at Penn State that I've seen that you could say, yeah, that's who he is exactly like. And I'm not saying he's definitely going to be better than Larry Johnson's senior year or Kajana Carter, but I don't know. He has a skill set to me that's very unique.
Yeah.
Especially
I mean,
for a true freshman. Yeah. I mean, to be that ready, that he seems like he really knows what he's doing, where he's going. Silas Red, you could tell, had a lot of talent, but his first year, sometimes he loses feet or he maybe missed the cut. But Saquon doesn't seem to do that
no.
a lot.
No, he doesn't. And I agree with you. I think everyone wants to make a comparison to someone. Mm-hmm. And to me, he's the first Saquon Barkley. There's just something about him that's like, he does things like a lot of other great backs do, but there's also some things that's unto himself.
And he was the best freshman probably at his position, but I don't necessarily have as much a problem as some people do with Peppers getting the award, only because if you consider him a freshman, I guess that's the other question, because I think he did play some last year.
Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman. Yeah. Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman. He played a little bit last year,
yeah.
And he got X'd out of it. I mean, that's fine. And he did.
His versatility is what
he took
through.
The Charles Woodson road to winning
this award.
Yeah.
So. But it's a freshman award. You know, I think both of these guys are saying, you know what, we want to do a lot more than win. Big Ten Freshman of the Year.
Yeah, you want to be Player of the Year in this league, and if you're Player
exactly.
of the Year, there's a good chance if you're Player of the Year, you're on a team that's really highly successful.
Right.
There's a question
right.
about that.
No, I have a much bigger issue with Austin Johnson not getting first team All Big Ten. I'm not sure, you know, if the media doesn't get it right, you at least think the coaches would. I don't, that's
stunning to me. The coaches had him third team, didn't they?
I don't know again, I'm not an expert on defensive tackles, but I don't know if I've seen a 320-pound guy at Penn State do what he's done.
No.
The number of tackles shows you how active he is for his size. He isn't taking plays off.
I thought the best two tackles, and I'll be honest with you, my vote reflected it, the best two tackles in the Big Ten this year were Adolphus Washington of Ohio State and Austin Johnson mm-hmm. of Penn State. And they weren't the first team tackles. And to me, it was an easy vote. No offense.
Right. Some positions I wouldn't know who to put because we don't see the other teams that often. But I just can't. Yeah, you're right about that.
Frank, always a pleasure. Thanks so much, my friend. It was great to hear from you. And
yes.
Your perspective is always greatly appreciated by me.
Yep. Great. And I hope to see you soon, Steve. And have a great pre-holiday season here coming up.
Same to you, my friend. Thanks, Frank.
All right. Take care.
Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Tomorrow on the show, we will have Neil Coulong. I'm doing the show tomorrow from Boston. Then next week, we'll have the show on Tuesday from Washington, D.C. We'll be downtown D.C. And before the month's out, we'll be in Las Vegas. And then I don't know where after that. We're still waiting. It appears to be a three-horse race. I don't think there's anything else outside of Jacksonville, Nashville, or Santa Clara at the moment. And... So that's the story. So we'll take it on the show tomorrow. Neil Coulong is going to join us tomorrow to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers and whether or not they've released Antonio Brown from the witness protection program. Because Richard Sherman put him there. I mean... 500-plus yards for Roethlisberger, who made a great adjustment, by the way. He went in another direction, which is what you have to do. And Antonio Brown, hey, he's the number one guy, number one guy, number one guy. And then he gets out there against a number one guy, and he just disappeared. Wow. I mean, he disappeared. So Neil Coulong tomorrow. Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, reemerges on the show Thursday. and something I want to talk to him about will be the Los Angeles situation with the Rams, the Chargers, and the Raiders. Since he is in L.A., I want to talk to him about that because that's an intriguing story on the future of the NFL. And I think that we'll take a long look at that, as well as the business of bowl games, the business of sports in general, where we are. Television contracts. Big Ten's right now already in the process of negotiating its TV contract with the networks. How might that play out? I'm Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report on Friday. So a lot going on in the show. Hope you enjoyed it yesterday. All right, and I hope you enjoyed it today. We've had, what, 7 guests on the last 2 days? It's not a bad average. And then tomorrow we'll have Neil Kulong on with us from Boston and Tony Knopp on Thursday. Once again, the Austin Bowl and the Melbourne Bowl and the Medal of Honor Bowl all want to be in the mix next year. Meanwhile, Los Angeles, the Christmas Bowl, the Dubai Bowl, the Ireland Bowl, Toronto Bowl, and Little Rock, Arkansas Bowl all would like a slice of the action. They don't have enough teams now. And Illinois caught a break. They desperately want to go to a bowl game. They were 6th in the APR on the outside looking in. Yesterday, Missouri said no. Illinois moved up one. They're in.